Welcome to Entrepreneurial Entrails for some short stories on the guts and glories of being an entrepreneur. Hi, it's Elizabeth Plouffe, and today is Wise Word Wednesdays on Entrepreneurial Entrails. So welcome. If you are a reader or a user of Wise Things, then I hope you find value in this. I mainly focus on books, but sometimes when I haven't been able to get to the reading, I will move on to software or online tools that I've discovered and love. One of them is Canva, QuickBooks. I've talked about a few different things. But I did get a book in. I am in the process right now of reading Peter Drucker's Innovation and Entrepreneurship, which has been a fantastic read, but it's seriously heavy stuff as far as the level of knowledge that you need to fully grasp and understand. And that's not where my background is. So I'm loving it, learning from it, tons of stickies to read stuff from. But I decided to take a break. And one of my favorite people right now, and probably for a very long time, is Brené Brown. And she did a great TED Talk a few years ago on the power of shame. She's been with Oprah Winfrey on the OWN Network. She did a fantastic YouTube video on living bravely with Oprah, which I just absolutely loved. And I will find the right link for you, because it's honestly worth a listen and a look. Here it is. Living Brave with Brené Brown and Oprah Winfrey. And unfortunately, it's not on their channels, which is weird. It's on the UHGCSW. And I guess it's a University of Social Work or what have you. But man, is it good. So she talks about critics. She talks about a whole bunch of things. So I'm going to read you, if you don't know who Brené Brown is, I'm on her website. I'm just going to read you a little bit of her biography. So Dr. Brené Brown is a research professor at the University of Houston Graduate College of Social Work. Oh, well, that would be the other thing there. There you go. She has spent the past 13 years studying vulnerability, courage, worthiness, and shame. Brené is the author of 3 number one New York Times bestsellers, Rising Strong, Daring Greatly, and The Gifts of Imperfection, which is the book I'm going to talk about today. She's also the founder and CEO of The Daring Way and Courage Works, an online learning community that offers e-courses, workshops, and interviews for individuals and organizations ready for braver living, loving, and leading. That's a really long sentence. Brené's 2010 TEDx Houston talk, The Power of Vulnerability, is one of the top 5 most viewed TED Talks in the world with over 25 million viewers. It's fantastic. Brené lives in Houston with her husband Steve and their 2 children, Ellen and Charlie. So one of the reasons that Brené Brown appeals to me, other than she just seems to be, never met her, seems to be a really nice lady, is that she's very left brain, right brain, and I love that. Typically, the stuff I've run into that deals with any type of emotion situation, such as vulnerability and shame and whatever, tend to be kind of woo-woo people that my left brain just screams no. And because of the research that she uses to back up the stories that she shares, and she refers to herself as a researcher and storyteller, it's, for me anyway, it's easier to take on board and to take seriously. So today I'm going to talk to you about the gifts of imperfection, letting go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are, your guide to a wholehearted life. And I will confess that some of this did not resonate with me. Some of it was a little, it just took me too far down the woo-woo path. And one of the, I'll tell you about the my little breakthrough later on. I'm going to write a note to myself so I don't forget. One of the reasons I've started reading this, of course, is I like her, and she's a fascinating woman, and I'm interested in this kind of stuff. I don't really, in my own truth anyway, I don't think I suffer with these things, but one of the things I have learned as an entrepreneur is that you can get in your own way mentally and not realize it. So anything I can do to make sure that that's not happening, I'm going to take those steps to doing. So this book is set up. It's a nice sized read. It's like 120 pages or something like that, 130. And she uses her own stories to sort of illustrate how she's gone through this. She's a firm believer in personal therapy and going through and solving your issues. And she breaks it down into different guideposts as the chapters. So there's 10 guideposts that she talks about. Some of the titles are like cultivating authenticity, cultivating a resilient spirit, gratitude and joy. She talks about the fear of the dark. Cultivating play and rest, which is huge for me. I'm not great at the resting thing. And cultivating meaningful work, yada, yada, yada. So I started reading it, and I really enjoyed it. So I have my Telltale stickies here. I mean, you can't see how many there are, but at least there was something there that I found interesting, right? So one of the things I found really interesting in one of the guidepost sections, and I'll just make sure of which guidepost it is, the gift of imperfection. So I guess this is the page 7. It's very at the beginning. She talks about boundaries. And that's one thing I haven't been great on, but I get really mad when people break through the boundaries. So she says here, when we fail to set boundaries and hold people accountable, we feel used and mistreated. This is why we sometimes attack who they are, which is far more hurtful than addressing a behavior or a choice. For our own sake, we need to understand that it's dangerous to our relationships and our well-being to get mired in shame and blame or to be full of self-righteous anger. It's also impossible to practice compassion from a place of resentment. If we're going to practice acceptance and compassion, we need boundaries and accountability. And I completely agree with that. And that's the basis of the book, is sort of balancing different feelings so that you can move forward. And I mean, it's still a bit, it's not beyond me, but it was, I've just finished reading it today. So I can definitely go back and read it again and get more out of it. And she talks about how when you're living in shame or resentment or those negative feelings, it really blocks your ability to create connections to other people. And especially from obviously more so from a personal perspective, but I firmly believe from a business perspective, if you are sitting in a place of lack and scarcity, that can breed feelings of resentment and uncertainty. And you can start to view other people as competition, and you just go at things from a negative perspective. And on my Sneaky Shit podcast, we just talked about being in a win-win situation when you're going into negotiations. And if you're sitting in a place where your emotions are unbalanced, and I don't mean like you're cray-cray in the head or anything, but that, you know, you're just angry and whatever, then you're always going to go into those business negotiations from a place of wanting to beat the other person. And that's never a great place to be from. You might get away with that a few times, but, you know, as Trump is evidence, it will come back and bite you in the ass at some point. So authenticity is something that I've never really struggled with. I've always been the opposite of everybody else wanting to fit in. I've always kind of looked at those people and gone, why? Like, why can't you just be yourself? And it's taken me a long time to really understand why that happens for people and to be more empathetic about if they're putting on an image or being fake or what have you. And she says here, authenticity is the daily practice of letting go of who we think we're supposed to be and embracing who we are. Choosing authenticity means cultivating the courage to be imperfect, to set boundaries, and to allow ourselves to be vulnerable. That's a hard one for me. Exercising the compassion that comes from knowing that we are all made of strength and struggle, and nurturing the connection and sense of belonging that can only happen when we believe that we are enough. Authenticity demands wholehearted living and loving, even when it's hard, even when we're wrestling with shame and fear of not being good enough, and especially when the joy is so intense that we're afraid to let ourselves feel it. Mindfully practicing authenticity during our most soul-searching struggles is how we invite grace, joy, and gratitude into our lives. And she goes on here just quickly to say, choosing authenticity is not an easy choice. E.E. Cummings wrote, "To be nobody but yourself in a world which is doing its best night and day to make you everybody but yourself means to fight the hardest battle which any human being can fight, and to never stop fighting. Staying real is one of the most courageous battles that we'll ever fight." And again, in business, it can be really easy to get swept along with what expectations are from bosses or colleagues or what have you, or even within your own business. You may choose to step aside from who you really are in order to get ahead, and that eventually becomes a really wearying state to be in. If you are not being true to yourself, you have to remember who this other person is you're being. If you're choosing to get by with lies and deception and what have you, that's really hard to maintain. And it's exhausting. And your energy is better spent on pursuits that build your business and build connections so that your business is moving ahead. She talks about a variety of you know, practicing critical awareness and developing the difference between hope and faith and spirituality, and how that, however that works for you. If you have a deity, if it's God, if it's Allah, if it's Muhammad, if it's whoever, or just a connection with the universe. She says that after all these thousands of people that she's interviewed and the research and data she's collected, that comes up as a key indicator of personal success and growth. So I have quite a good connection with God myself. I would consider myself a practicing Christian, though I'm not a avid churchgoer. God and I are pretty good as far as our conversations and relationship, which I think is all that matters. But even just, however you connect with something higher than yourself can definitely help you to move through difficult situations. And that's not absolving you of responsibility to get yourself through something, but knowing that there is a greater power there. For me anyway, it just works. I just feel better. I just feel more connected, and gives me strength to get through some interesting stuff. And she does talk here too about creativity and how when people let that go, right? So we're back to the left brain, right brain situation. Left brain is the data and the researcher, and the right brain is the creative and the funky side. And she talks about fitting in. She says, what does she talk about here? It's comparison and the negativity about comparison. Because as soon as you start comparing yourself to somebody else, I've dropped a sticky. As soon as you are in a situation where what you have isn't good enough, then you're in a situation where you can't appreciate what you have, and you're moving towards things that aren't necessarily fulfilling you in a way that you need them to, which is very cool to talk about. Okay. Oh, here we go. This was really cool. Talked about play, and I've never been one to shy away from. My kids laugh. My son said to me the other day, he says, "Mom, living with you is like living in a Disney movie. I never know when you're going to break into song." And I'm okay with that. And I have a fantastic friend, Jillian, and she's the same way. Unbeknownst to me, my auntie came over from England a couple of years ago. She breaks into song. My mom breaks into song. And maybe it's genetic. I don't know. But we don't hesitate. I don't care where we are. If the song fits, we sing it. If I need to dance in the street, we do it. If we're at a park and it's time to, go down the yellow brick road, then I do that little skippy dance that Dorothy does. And it's never occurred to me not to do those things. I've never been chastised. I'm very fortunate. I've never been told not to. Or when I was, I just decided to ignore it because hopping down the street like Dorothy felt good, and singing little bits of songs here and there is just, it's just instinctive. And I'm okay with that. So for those of you that struggle with playtime for adults, here's a funny thing she says here. Researching the concept of play got off to a rocky start. I learned this very quickly. Do not Google adult play. I was closing pornography pop-ups so fast it was like playing whack-a-mole. Once I recovered from that search disaster, I was lucky enough to find the work of Dr. Stuart Brown. Dr. Brown is a psychiatrist, clinical researcher, and founder of the National Institute for Play, which is an acronym that is NIP, which leads itself to a whole nother porn situation. He is also the author of a wonderful book titled Play, How It Shapes the Brain, Opens the Imagination, and Invigorates the Soul. Drawing on his own research, as well as the latest advances in biology, psychology, and neurology, Brown explains that play shapes our brain, helps us foster empathy, helps us navigate complex social groups, and is at the core of creativity and innovation. If you're wondering why play and rest are paired together in this guidepost, it's because after reading the research on play, I now understand that play is as essential to our health and functioning as rest. So if you're like me, you want to know what exactly is play. Brown proposes 7 properties of play, the first of which is that play is apparently purposeless. Basically, this means that we play for the sake of play. We do it because it's fun and we want to. And she goes on to discuss how play is not an option, that we can't exclude play from our life, whatever that means to you, because it causes that imbalance again, and it actually impairs your ability to be functional and cognizant and creative and useful. So if you struggle with downtime, if you struggle with finding ways to play, then one, you should read this book because it'll help you get through that. And two, you know, what's an hour a week? If it's too much, and when I was working with somebody on goal setting for their business, and they were saying how the demands on their time were preventing them from working on their business. So after listening to it for a little bit and respecting that that's how that person felt, I said, well, what if you scheduled an hour a week to work on your business? And it was interesting because her instinctive reaction was, well, what's an hour a week? That's not enough. And I said, well, it's more than you're doing now. And she did it. And I was so proud of her. So what if you scheduled an hour a week to play, to be purposeless, to allow your body to recharge and what have you? You know, an hour a week is not going to break the bank. And it's probably going to be far more beneficial than you realize. So she talks about the gremlins and all these types of things, that overcoming self-doubt and supposed to and what have you. And it was just a really interesting book. And I'll close out by sharing a bit of a personal thing here, that I really had a hard time with this book at first because I didn't understand what shame was, which I know sounds weird, but I don't anymore. Maybe I did at one point. I don't know. I don't get mired down with self-doubt and comparison and whatever to the point where it stops me from doing anything. I might sit in that for an hour and then I say F it and I just kind of go and do it. But there are times if I have a conflict with a client or a conflict with somebody that I view as important to me or what have you, that I go back to that feeling of standing in front of the principal when I was 10, which I don't ever, never got sent to the principal, to be honest, or called up on the carpet, what have you. And I never realized that that was shame. It's so weird. I'm 46. You think I'd know what shame is by now. But I didn't. I just, you know, I felt a bit embarrassed, but I didn't realize that it had, you know, shame attached to it and what have you. So that was kind of freeing because I could put a name on that feeling, that going in front of the principal feeling. And now I know how to stop it from spiraling into what she calls a shame spiral. So just if you're, you know, it's a good self-help book. I'm not usually a huge fan of self-help books, but this one definitely has bonuses. Plus, it's Brené Brown, which is always awesome. And it has the research to back up the recommendations within it, which always adds validity for me. So it's The Gifts of Imperfection. Let go of who you think you are. Oh, sorry. Let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are. Your Guide to a Wholehearted Life by Brené Brown, who is a PhD and just all around smarty pants. And I encourage you to check it out. Check out her website. I've just signed up to do cultivating creativity course with her, some kind of journaly thingy. So I'll hopefully be able to let you know what happens with that. But again, I hope you've had a fantastic week. I hope you've had an opportunity to be silly and play and recharge your batteries. And remember, just know that you have the guts and glory to create your own story. And I hope you get a chance to visit my website. You know, check out MCV Communications. Check me out on Twitter at MCVPloof. See what I'm doing there. And any comments that you have, if you get to try this book, if you enjoy it, if you learn something from it, I'd love to see those. You can send them to me. And that's pretty much it. I hope you've had a fantastic day. Have a fantastic week. And we'll talk soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye. Got